Hello, angels. It is me, Willow, and this is the third part of Lois Lowry's The Giver. It actually kind of feels funny to me to know that we're already on chapter 5 and I'm only on the third part, but it goes pretty quick, actually. I might end up reading a little bit more than two chapters tonight because the first chapter's only a couple pages long, so we'll see. You can probably tell by the title now where we're ending up. It's only like two chapters is like 20 pages. We'll see how long it takes. I'm not going to try and go over like 30 minutes. Anyway, if you haven't heard the first two parts of this, I strongly suggest that you do so. I'm a mature, responsible adult, and I went out of my way to update my Safe for Work audio index. So you can find those at the very bottom of that index, which is pinned to my Reddit profile. You can find the first two readings as well on Twitter if you scroll through all my shitposting and thirst traps and D&D stuff. And you can also find them pinned in the media channel of my Discord server, which is ironically also where you can find everything that's in the Safe for Work audio index on Reddit as well. In order, all that jazz. Easy to jump to. We'll probably eventually run out of pins and I'll end up fucked, but we'll find out. This is a story that flows like a plot, much different from Inferno, which is what we read last, though that followed a path that was a lot more disjointed. This is not that, so if you don't know the plot already, you might just show up fucking weird and confused. Anyway, I'm gonna start reading. I am in bed. I'm cozy. I'm comfy. I have good company. My candle is lit. I have my glasses on. I have something to drink. I should have gotten more of it, but whatever. I think that's it. I think I can just go. I think I'm just gonna go. All right. Without further ado, chapter 5 of Lois Lowry's The Giver. Usually, at the morning ritual when the family members told their dreams, Jonas didn't contribute much. He rarely dreamed. Sometimes he awoke with a feeling of fragments afloat in his sleep, but he couldn't seem to grasp them and put them together into something worthy of telling at the ritual. But this morning was different. He had dreamed very vividly the night before. His mind wandered while Lily, as usual, recounted a lengthy dream, this one a frightening one in which she had, against the rules, been riding her mother's bicycle and had been caught by the security guards. They all listened carefully and discussed it with Lily, the warning that she had been given in the dream. "Thank you for your dream, Lily," Jonas said, the standard phrase automatically, and tried to pay better attention while his mother told of a dream fragment, a disquieting scene where she had been chastised for a rule infraction that she didn't understand. Together, they all agreed that it probably resulted from her feelings when she reluctantly dealt punishment to a citizen who had broken the major rules a second time. Father said that he had no dreams. "Gabe?" Father asked, looking down at the basket where the new child lay gurgling at his feet, ready to be taken back to the nurturing center for the day. They all laughed. Dream telling began with threes. If new children dreamed, no one knew. "Jonas?" Mother asked. They always asked, though they knew how rarely Jonas had a dream to tell. "I did dream last night," Jonas told them. He shifted in his chair, frowning. "Good," Father said. "Tell us." "The details aren't clear, really," Jonas explained, trying to recreate the odd dream in his mind. "I think I was in the bathing room, and the house of old." "That's where you were yesterday," Father pointed out. Jonas nodded. "But it wasn't really the same. There was a tub in the dream, but only one. And the real bathing room has rows and rows of them. But the room in the dream was warm and damp. I had taken off my tunic and hadn't put on the smock, so my chest was bare. I was perspiring because it was so warm. Aunt Fiona was there, the way she was yesterday." "Asher too?" Mother asked. Jonas shook his head. "No, it was only me and Fiona, alone in the room, standing beside the tub. She was laughing, but I wasn't. I was almost a little angry at her in the dream, because she wasn't taking me seriously." "Seriously about what?" Lily asked. Jonas looked at his plate. For some reason that he didn't understand, he felt slightly embarrassed. "I think I was trying to convince her that she should get into the tub of water." He paused. He knew he had to tell it all. It was not only all right, but necessary to tell all of a dream. "So He forced himself to retell the part that made him uneasy. "I wanted her to take off her clothes and get into the tub," he explained quickly. "I wanted to bathe her. I had the sponge in my hand. But she wouldn't. She kept laughing and saying no." He looked up at his parents. "That's all," he said. "Can you describe the strongest feeling in your dream, son?" father asked. Jonas thought about it. The details were murky and vague, but the feelings were clear and flooded him again as he thought. "The wanting," he said. "I knew that she wouldn't, and I think I knew that she shouldn't, but I wanted it so terribly. I could feel the wanting all through me." "Thank you for your dream, Jonas," mother said after a moment. She glanced at father. "Lily," father said, "it's time to leave for school. Would you walk beside me this morning and keep an eye on the new child's basket? We want to be certain that he doesn't wiggle himself loose." Jonas began to rise and collect his textbooks. He thought it surprising that they hadn't talked about his dream at length before the thank you. Perhaps they found it as confusing as he had. "Wait, Jonas," mother said gently. "I'll write an apology to your instructor so you won't have to speak one for being late." He sank back down into his chair, puzzled. He waved to father and Lily as they left the dwelling, carrying Gabe in his basket. He watched while mother tidied the remains of the morning meal and placed the tray by the front door for the collection crew. Finally, she sat down beside him at the table. "Jonas," she said with a smile, "that feeling you described as wanting. It was your first stirrings. Father and I have been expecting it to happen to you. It happens to everyone. It happened to father when he was your age, and it happened to me, and it will happen someday to Lily." "And very often," mother added, "it begins with a dream." Stirrings. He had heard that word before. He remembered that there was a reference to the stirrings in the Book of Rules, though he didn't remember what it said. And now and then the speaker mentioned it. "Attention! A reminder that stirrings must be reported in order for treatment to take place." He had always ignored the announcement because he didn't understand it, and it had never seemed to apply to him in any way. He ignored, as most citizens did, many of the commands and reminders by the speaker. "Do I have to report it?" he asked his mother. She laughed. "You did in the dream telling. That's enough." "But what about the treatment? The speaker says the treatment must take place." Jonas felt miserable. Just when the ceremony was about to happen, his ceremony of 12, would he have to go someplace for treatment, just because of a stupid dream? But his mother laughed again in a reassuring affection. "No, no," she said, "it's just the pills. You're ready for the pills, that's all. That's the treatment for stirrings." Jonas brightened. He knew about the pills. His parents both took them each morning, and some of his friends did, he knew. Once he had been heading off to school with Asher, both of them on their bikes, when Asher's father had called them from their dwelling doorway. "You forgot your pill, Asher!" Asher had groaned good-naturedly and turned his bike. It had ridden back while Jonas waited. It was the sort of thing one didn't ask a friend about because it might have fallen into that uncomfortable category of being different. Asher took a pill each morning. Jonas did not. Always better, less rude, to talk about things that were the same. Now he swallowed the small pill that his mother handed him. "That's all?" he asked. "That's all," she replied, returning the bottle to the cupboard. "But you mustn't forget. I'll remind you for the first weeks, but then you must do it on your own. If you forget, the stirrings will come back. The dreams of the stirrings will come back. Sometimes the dosage must be adjusted." "Asher takes them," Jonas confided. His mother nodded, unsurprised. "Many of your groupmates probably do. The males, at least. And they will all soon. Females, too. How long will I have to take them?" "Until you enter the House of Old," she explained. "All of your adult life. But it becomes routine after a while. You won't even pay much attention to it." She looked at her watch. "If you leave right now, you won't even be late for school. Hurry along." "And thank you again, Jonas," she added as he went to the door. "For your dream." Pedaling rapidly down the path, Jonas felt oddly proud to have joined those who took the pills. For a moment, though, he had remembered the dream again. The dream had felt pleasurable. Though the feelings were confused, he thought that he had liked the feelings that his mother called stirrings. He'd remembered that upon waking, he had wanted to feel the stirrings again. Then, in the same way that his own dwelling slipped away behind him as he rounded the corner on his bicycle, the dream slipped away from his thoughts. Very briefly, a little guiltily, he tried to grasp it back, but the feelings had disappeared. The stirrings were gone. Okay, that's chapter 5. I'm going to grab a drink. I'm going to grab a drink. And then we'll do 6. This is a very dystopian way to deal with puberty. I assume just no one fucks. They just get, like, their hormones blocked, and then they, like, don't want to fuck anymore. Which, I'm not going to go into, like, what that would be like if it was a thing. Anyway. Chapter 6. Lily, please hold still, Mother said again. Lily, standing in front of her, fidgeted impatiently. I can tie them myself, she complained. I always have. I know that, Mother replied, straightening the hair ribbon on the little girl's braids. But I also know that they constantly come loose, and more often than not, they're dangling down your back by the afternoon. Today, at least, we want them to be neatly tied and to stay neatly tied. I don't like hair ribbons. I'm glad I only have to wear them one more year, Lily said irritably. Next year I get my bicycle too, she added more cheerfully. There are good things each year, Jonas reminded her. This year you get to start your volunteer hours. And remember last year when you became a 7, you were so happy to get your front button jacket. The little girl nodded and looked down at herself, at the jacket, with its row of large buttons that designated her as a 7. 4s, 5s, and 6s all wore jackets that fastened down the back so that they would have to help each other dress and learn interdependence. The front button jacket was the first sign of independence and the first very visible symbol of growing up. The bicycle, at 9, would be the powerful emblem of moving gradually out into the community, away from the protective family unit. Lily grinned and wiggled away from her mother. And this year you get your assignment, she said to Jonas in an excited voice. I hope you get pilot and you can take me flying. Sure I will, said Jonas. And I'll get a special little parachute that fits just you. And I'll take you up to, maybe 20,000 feet and open the door and... Jonas, Mother warned. I was only joking, Jonas groaned. I don't want pilot anyway. If I get pilot, I'll put in an appeal. Come on, Mother said. She gave Lily's ribbons a final tug. Jonas, are you ready? Did you take your pill? I want to get a good seat at the auditorium. She prodded Lily to the front door and Jonas followed. It was a short ride to the auditorium. Lily waving to her friends from her seat on the back of Mother's bicycle. Jonas stowed his bicycle beside Mother's and made his way through the throng to find his group. The entire community attended the ceremony each year. For the parents, it meant 2 holidays off from work. They sat together in a huge hall. Children sat with their groups until they went, one by one, to the stage. Father, though, would not join Mother in the audience right away. For the earliest ceremony, the naming, the nurturers brought the new children to the stage. Jonas, from his place on the balcony with the 11s, searched the auditorium for a glimpse of his father. It wasn't all that hard to spot the nurturers section in the front. Coming from it were the wails and howls of the new children who sat squirming on the nurturers' laps. At every other public ceremony, the audience was silent, but attentive. But once a year, they all smiled indulgently at the commotion from the little ones waiting to receive their names and families. Jonas finally caught his father's eye and waved. Father grinned and waved back, and then held up the hand of the new children on his lap, making it wave too. It wasn't Gabriel. Gabe was back at the nurturing center today being cared for by the night crew. He had been given an unusual and special reprieve from the committee, and granted an additional year of nurturing before his naming and placement. Father had gone before the committee with a plea on behalf of Gabriel, who had not yet gained the weight appropriate to his days of life, nor begun to sleep soundly enough at night to be placed with his family unit. Normally, such a new child would be labeled inadequate and released from the community. Instead, as a result of Father's plea, Gabriel had been labeled uncertain and given an additional year. He would continue to be nurtured at the center and would spend his nights with Jonas's family unit. Each family member, including Lily, had been required to sign a pledge that they would not become attached to this little temporary guest, and that they would relinquish him without protest or appeal when he was assigned to his own family unit at next year's ceremonies. At least, Jonas thought, after Gabriel was placed next year, they would still see him often because he would be part of the community. If he were released, they would not get to see him again. Ever. Those who were released, even as new children, were sent elsewhere and never returned to the community. Father had not had to release a single new child this year, so Gabriel would have represented a real failure in sadness. Even Jonas, though he didn't hover over the little one the way Lily and his father did, was glad that Gabe had not been released. The first ceremony began right on time, and Jonas watched as one after another each new child was given a name and handed by the nurturers to the family unit. For some it was a first child, but many came to the stage accompanied by another child, beaming with pride to receive their little brother or sister the way Jonas had when he was about to be a 5. Asher poked Jonas's arm. "Remember when we got Philippa?" he asked in a loud whisper. Jonas nodded. It had only been last year. Asher's parents had waited a long time before applying for a second child. Maybe, Jonas suspected, that they had been so exhausted by Asher's lively foolishness that they had needed a little time. Two of their group, Fiona and another female named Thea, were missing temporarily, waiting with their parents to receive new children. But it was rare that there was such an age gap between children in a family unit. When her family's ceremony completed, Fiona took her seat where she had been saved for her in the row right ahead of Asher and Jonas. She turned around and whispered to them, "He's cute, but I don't like his name very much." She made a face and giggled. Fiona's new brother had been named Bruno. It wasn't a great name, Jonas thought. Well, like Gabriel, for example. But it was okay. The audience applause, which was enthusiastic at each naming, rose in exuberant swell when one potential parent, glowing with pride, took a male new child and heard him named Caleb. This new Caleb was a replacement child. The couple had lost their first Caleb, a cheerful little 4. Loss of a child was very, very rare. The community was extraordinarily safe, each citizen watchful and protective of all children. But somehow the first little Caleb had wandered away unnoticed and had fallen into a river. The entire community had performed the ceremony of loss together, murmuring the name Caleb throughout an entire day, less and less frequently, softer in volume, as the long and somber day went on, so that the little 4 seemed to fade away gradually from everyone's consciousness. Now, with the special naming, the community performed a brief murmur of replacement, repeating the name for the first time since the loss. Softly and slowly at first, then faster with greater volume as the couple stood in the stage with the new child sleeping in the mother's arms. It was as if the first Caleb was returning. Another new child was given the name Roberto. Jonas remembered that Roberto the Old had been released only last week. But there was no murmur of replacement for the new little Roberto. Release was not the same as loss. He sat politely through the ceremony of 2 and 3 and 4, increasingly bored as he was each year. Then a break for midday meal, served outdoors, and back again to the seats for 5, 6s, 7s, and finally, for the last of the first day ceremonies, the 8s. Jonas watched and cheered as Lily marched proudly to the stage, became an 8, and received her identifying jacket that she would wear this year, this one with smaller buttons and, for the first time, pockets, indicating that she was mature enough to keep track of her own small belongings. She stood solemnly listening to the speech for firm instructions on the responsibilities of 8 and doing volunteer hours for the first time. But Jonas could see that Lily, though she seemed attentive, was looking longingly at the row of gleaming bicycles, which would be presented tomorrow morning to the 9s. "Next year, Lily, Billy," Jonas thought. It was an exhausting day, and even Gabriel, retrieved in his basket from the nurturing center, slept soundly that night. Finally, it was the morning of the ceremony of 12. Now, Father sat beside Mother in the audience. Jonas could see them applauding dutifully as the 9s, one by one, wheeled their new bicycles, each with its gleaming name tag attached to the back, from the stage. He knew that his parents cringed a little, as he did, when Fritz, who lived in the dwelling next door to theirs, received his bike and almost immediately bumped it into the podium. Fritz was a very awkward child who had been summoned for chastisement again and again. His transgressions were small ones, always. Shoes on the wrong foot, schoolwork misplaced, failure to study adequately for a quiz, But each such error reflected negatively on his parents' guidance and infringement on the community's sense of order and success. Jonas and his family had not been looking forward to Fritz's bicycle, which they realized would probably too often be dropped on the front walk instead of wheeled neatly into his port. Finally, the nines were all resettled into their seats, each one having wheeled a bicycle outside where it would be waiting for its owner at the end of the day. Everyone always chuckled and made small jokes when the nines rode home for the first time. "Want me to show you how to ride?" older friends would call. "I know you've never been on a bike before." But invariably, the grinning nines, who, in technical violation of the rule, had been practicing secretly for weeks, would mount, ride off in perfect balance, training wheels never touching the ground. Then the tens. Jonas never found the ceremony of ten particularly interesting, only time-consuming, as each child's hair was snipped neatly into its distinguishing cut. Females lost their braids at ten. Males, too, relinquished their long childish hair and took on a more manly short style, which exposed their ears. Laborers moved quickly to the stage with brooms and swept away the mounds of discarded hair. Jonas could see that the parents of the new tens stir and murmur, and he knew that this evening, in many dwellings, they would be snipping and straightening out the hastily done haircuts, trimming them into a neater line. Elevens. It seemed a short time ago that Jonas had undergone the ceremony of 11, but he remembered that it was not one of the more interesting ones. By 11, one was only waiting to be 12. It was simply a marking of time with no meaningful changes. There was new clothing, different undergarments for the females, whose bodies were beginning to change, and longer trousers for the male, with a specifically shaped pocket for the small calculator that they would use this year in school. But those were simply presented in a wrapped package without any accompanying speech. Break for midday meal. Jonas realized he was hungry. He and his groupmates congregated by the tables in front of the auditorium and took their packaged food. Yesterday, there had been a merriment at lunch, a lot of teasing and energy, but today, the group stood anxiously, separate from the other children. Jonas watched the nines gravitate towards their waiting bicycles, each one admiring his or her name tag. He saw the tens stroking their new shortened hair, the females shaking their heads to feel an unaccustomed lightness without the heavy braids that they had worn so long. "I heard about a guy who was absolutely certain he was going to be assigned an engineer," Asher muttered as they ate. "Instead, they gave him sanitation laborer. He went out the next day, jumped in the river, swam across, and joined the next community he came to. Nobody ever saw him again." Jonas laughed. "Somebody made that story up, Ash," he said. "My father said he heard that story when he was 12. But Asher wasn't reassured. He was eyeing the river where it was visible behind the auditorium. "I can't even swim very well," he said. "My swimming instructor said that I don't have the right boyishness or something." "Buoyancy," Jonas corrected him. "Whatever. I don't have it. I'll sink." "Anyway," Jonas pointed out, "have you ever once known of anyone, I mean really known for sure, Asher, not just in a heard story about it, who joined another community?" "No," Asher admitted reluctantly, "but you can, it says so in the rules. If you don't fit in, you can apply for elsewhere and be released. My mother says that once, about 10 years ago, someone applied and was gone the next day." Then he chuckled. "She told me about it because I was driving her crazy. She threatened to apply for elsewhere." She was joking. "I know, but it's true, what she said, someone did that once. She said that it was really true, here today and gone tomorrow, never seen again. Not even a ceremony of release." Jonas shrugged. It didn't worry him. How could someone not fit in? The community was so meticulously ordered. The choices were so carefully made. Even the matching of the spouses was given such a weighty consideration that sometimes an adult who applied to receive a spouse waited months or even years before a match was approved and announced. All of the factors, disposition, energy level, intelligence, and interest, had to be corresponded and interact perfectly. Jonas's mother, for example, had higher intelligence than his father, but his father had a calmer disposition, so they balanced each other out. Their match, like all matches, had been monitored by the Committee of Elders for 3 years before they could apply for children. Had always been a successful one. Like the matching of spouses and the naming of and placement of new children, the assignments were scrupulously thought by the Committee of Elders. He was so certain that his assignment, whatever it was to be, and Asher's too would be the right one for them. He only wished that the midday break would conclude so that the audience would re-enter the auditorium and the suspense would be at its end. As if in answer to his unspoken wish, the signal came and the crowd began to move towards the doors. I think that's a good place to stop. I want to read more because I want to know what he gets, because I don't fucking remember. But we've been reading for 25 minutes, and I think two chapters of recording is probably pretty good. Ooh. Why throw things, Willow? That's a mistake. Anyway, that's all for me tonight, loves. I hope you enjoyed. I'll be back tomorrow with some more. I missed a spot when I shaved my legs. Now you all know. Have a great night, angels. I love you all very much. Take care of yourself and be kind.